Okay, let's go. Mark Carmen here. Hope you had a great day. Feel like I'm talking to you in bed right now. Let's have a moment. Maybe you're driving home from work. Maybe you're about to just go out for the evening. Patty's off tonight. I'm here until 1 in the morning. Then Nick DiGilio will be along. A lot to do on the show today. We've got Mia Hamm on the program. That's right. Women's soccer rolling today. Mia will be on the show. Why are the women not making as much money as the men? This is ridiculous. We'll get Mia on the show today, one of the greatest, if not the greatest, women's soccer player in the history of the world, this country, all of it. But I got a question for you to start here. Hey, Vic Vaughn, are you a good person?
Am I a good person?
Yeah.
I think I am. I try to be.
You think you're a good person. All right. I think you're a good person. I believe in you as a person.
That's a big question.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I guess each day I try to make sure if I did something wrong to someone, I try to apologize either that day or the very next day. That helps a lot because you're keeping a track of yourself every day. You know, compartmentalize your life into 24-hour sections. It's easier to be a good person.
Right. So, okay, you've got ways to keep yourself in line.
Sure.
I like that. I don't know if I've actually... I need more organization in my life, period. And now, you know, now you're opening up a vision for how you could even be more organized to check yourself on being a good person.
Oh, yeah.
Last night, the reason why I bring this up, I'm a big basketball fan, as you all know, hopefully, if you have heard me before. The Toronto Raptors were not good people. They were flat-out bad people last night. Kevin Durant, one of the greatest basketball players in the NBA, if not the best right now, making it back to the court in the finals, Game 5. Giving it all he's got. He's got a calf injury. He's going out there to fight for his team, to compete, to do what he was born to do. And then in the second quarter last night, he came up lame, and this was the moment.
It's the right calf that put him out. His teammates going over to check on him. I don't like to hear the fans cheering.
I'm surprised by that, and the players are telling him not to be doing that.
So there they were, Raptors fans. They see Durant go down. They see him try to get up. They see him limping. They know he's hurt, and the cheers get louder and louder until the actual Toronto Raptors players turn to the crowd and say, "Hey, don't be cheering when a guy's getting injured. That's not the type of people we're supposed to be." And then there's a whole Jurassic Park of Raptors fans outside the building. They're going nuts outside because Kevin Durant just got injured and their team's going to win. And this guy's hurt and that's sweet because it's good for me. Openly cheering when somebody gets injured. Roe Coleman's shaking her head. She can't believe it. I'm not surprised at all. We're getting worse. We are. We're just getting worse. It's not about, it's about me. I want to win. I don't care how it happens. You got hurt. Ha ha. That sucks for you, but it's better for me. I am cheering. My life is like, I don't know, 0.1% better for the next 10 minutes. So I'm going to be openly cheering against you.
That's awful.
Yeah.
Is it that serious?
Yeah, it is. They're Raptors fans. They've never won the NBA championship. They're one win away, and they open and they knew if KD's out, we got a better chance to win. Kevin Durant is 30 years old. He's in the prime of his NBA career. He's an incredibly wealthy man no matter what happens going forward. He's got a player option for next year for $31 million. By the way, he's earned every penny of that. But he loves to play basketball, which is the whole thing that was ridiculous about Durant being out and fans and even players perhaps on Golden State were questioning this guy. Why is he sitting out? How come he hasn't come back yet? He's looking towards the future. Where's he going to play next year? He doesn't care about us. Kevin Durant loves one thing in life more than he loves anything else, and that is playing the game of basketball. It's what he's done his entire life. It's the reason why he's one of the best players, if not the best, in the game. You don't get to that level not loving what you do. The whole premise that he didn't want to play because he was looking out for himself was ridiculous. And then he gets out there, and he's taking the risk, putting himself out there for his team, for himself, for his family, whatever you want to call it. And then he gets hurt, and these guys are, Raptors fans are waving at him as he gets hurt and is walking off the court, waving bye-bye. And by the way, I'm not here, WGN 38 States and Canada, I'm not here to pick on Toronto fans. Because if it was at the United Center in Chicago, I don't think it would have been any different. If it was in Detroit, Michigan, I don't think it would have been any different. Cleveland, Ohio, same thing. LA Lakers, same thing. Hockey fans, same thing. The phone number, by the way, is 312-981-7200. I want to ask you, I'm looking for honesty here. What's the worst thing you've ever done as a sports fan? Because there is a lot of Raptors fans that are looking in the mirror right now, and they got to be thinking, I can't believe I just did that last night. I am on video. I am all over Twitter. I'm all over Facebook. I'm all over Instagram. I'm in Vic Vaughn's news. And I look like a complete moron and a total jerk. And I completely lost myself in the moment. And then, you know, as he finally gets off the court and they really realize that he's hurt, and the Raptors players are saying, hey, don't be booing this guy. What are you, don't be cheering that he's hurt. Then they actually started cheering and chanting his name, KD, KD, KD.
Womp womp. I feel like it wasn't this bad back in 2012 when Derrick Rose tore his ACL. Was it?
That's different because it was at home. And that's not, it's not even different. It's interesting that you bring up Derrick Rose, Ro. Because, I mean, everybody was in stunned silence, and the United Center, you could hear a pin drop. But what's similar to that situation is everybody was yelling at Derrick Rose. Hey, man, how come you're not playing? You don't care about the Chicago Bulls. You only care about yourself. How come you're not in the court? The doctors have cleared you. Doctors cleared Kevin Durant yesterday. Golden State Warriors, miraculously, the doctors like, you know, you're good. We're down 3-1, you're good. If the Warriors were up 3-1 in the series, would the doctors have cleared him? Probably not. But in this case, doctors cleared him. By the way, when we come back here, let's take a quick timeout. 312-981-7200, phone line, text line. Worst thing you've ever done as a fan. Bob Myers, Warriors president of basketball operations, he was crying about it afterwards. I'm going to play that coming back here. Hey, watch for Chicago's very own stories with Micah and Joe. Michael Matera, Joe Donlin, weeknights on WGN TV News at 9. We'll do that coming back. And Andy Mazur was promoting that I was on the show, and he was like, I don't even know what it was. We're going to play that coming back here, too. Quick timeout, 720 WGN. Mark Carmen in for Patty Vasquez. Hope you're having a great night. 1122. Can I hear the, it was the end of the White Sox postgame show. Andy Mazur was wrapping up. And then he was promoing who was coming up next. And this is how it sounded.
Coming up next, Mark Carmen. Coming up next, Mark Carmen. Mark Carmen. Mark Carmen. Mark Carmen.
It's not as bad as I thought it was. I thought it sounded like coming up next, Mark Carmen.
You thought he was surprised to hear you were going to be on the air.
Yeah, let me hear it again.
Mark Carmen.
Mark Carmen. Was Mazur happy I was on? Can't figure it out. I think he was.
I think he was elated.
Was that elation or was that confusion?
It sounded more like elation.
Mark Carmen.
One more time.
Mark Carmen.
Mark Carmen. Might have been elation. Could have been confusion. Might have been something right in the middle. All right. I needed to hear that back. Thank you very much, Ro, for pulling that. 312-981-7200 is the phone number as we talk about the worst thing you've ever done as a fan, as Raptors fans in Toronto cheered when Kevin Durant tore his Achilles tendon and is going to be out for the year. not just out for the finals, and maybe his career will never be the same. And there they were, cheering and waving bye-bye. It made me sick. And then I was thinking, you know what? You're no better, Carmen. You've done terrible things at a sporting event. Not in my adult life, for the record, but I did think back to, I was a young man, and I think I was at a baseball game once, and I was yelling at one of the catchers. I was giving it to Jody Davis at a spring training game. My dad was sitting right next to me, Papa Fred. He let me go at it. I was a complete and utter moron. And then I felt like an idiot. And then I was like, okay, don't do that again, Mark, young Mark. That's not the Carmen you want to be. But then, so I had my moment. I'm not trying to put myself above Toronto Raptors fans. Although, as an adult, I would like to think I wouldn't cheer when an opposing player, if it was a villain, if it was a Bill Laimbeer back in the day who used to try to injure the Chicago Bulls, throw a Scottie Pippen to the ground, Michael Jordan to the ground, if he got hurt, I probably would cheer. That wouldn't bother me. But Kevin Durant's not that guy. He just wants to go out there and hoop. And these guys just waving goodbye to him. And then, for the record, he shouldn't have been out there in the first place. And here is the Warriors basketball of operations, Bob Myers, after the game. In 3, 2, and 1.
Kevin had it's an Achilles injury. I don't know the extent of it. He'll have an MRI tomorrow. Prior to coming back, he went through 4 weeks with our medical team, and it was thorough, and it was experts and multiple MRIs and multiple doctors, and we felt good about the process. He was cleared to play tonight. That was a collaborative decision. I don't believe there's anybody to blame, but I understand this world, and if you have to, you can blame me. I run our basketball operations department, and let me tell you something about Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant loves to play basketball, and the people that questioned whether he wanted to get back to this team were wrong. And I'm not here to... He's one of the most misunderstood people. He's a good teammate. He's a good person. It's not fair.
Super emotional. I loved it.
I'm lucky to know him.
You are lucky to know him, Bob. Thanks. But you shouldn't, and it's hard to point the finger at anyone. And Kevin Durant wanted to play. But at the end of the... I'm always amazed when you don't look at the long term, even in the NBA Finals. The concept that this guy who hadn't played in over a month was going to step on the court in Game 5, down 3-1, and he was going to play with that injury, which sometimes can take up to 3 months, and he was going to be all right. It was incredibly, incredibly stupid. I wish I had been out in front of it myself and said, do not play this guy. I don't care if you don't win the series or not. And most likely, by the way, even if he plays, you're still not winning the series. But you got to think, you think long term. He's got the whole second half of his career in front of him. What does that look like now? Not as good. Worst things you've done as a fan, by the way, people are texting in. I would crumple up dollar bills. Oy, there's some bad things coming in here. I can't even read that. The worst thing we ever did as fans was throw things at John Marks' wife. We had first row, second balcony, and she sat in the lower bowl. We would crumple up dollar bills and try to hit her in the head with dollar bills. She had a little kid with her. He would pick them up. That's pretty much the worst thing.
That's pretty relentless.
John Marks is a hockey player, former Blackhawk. You're throwing things at John Marks. I appreciate you admitting it, by the way. That's awesome that you were willing to say that. But we're sick. We're diseased, and the Raptors fans last night were diseased. I am very, very, very proud of the city of Chicago. They're coming after me. They're coming after me, Ro. I'll talk about it coming up after 11:30. Quick timeout. We'll get you in the news. 720 WGN. 720 WGN, 11:37. Hope you're having a great evening. Mark Carmen with you. Feel like I gotta sort of dial down the energy. It's like late at night. Just feels like a different time to be talking on the radio. Hope you're having a great night, though. Let's get some enthusiasm about that. We're talking about the worst things you've ever done as a sports fan. And in about 3 minutes, I'm going to give the city of Chicago some major props as they're coming after me. They found me. I'll explain that in a second. But 708 text in, Carm, as a Cubs fan living in Houston in the early 2000s, I peed on the Astrodome Stadium. Yeah, it's a, you know, Cubs didn't do well at the Astrodome. It was very tough for them. I get the anger. Good job admitting. Not your best moment, but hey, you moved forward. You're a better person today. It probably felt good in the moment. 312-981-7200. Lulu's got a sports sin confession. Hello, Lulu.
Hey, Mark Carmen, I'm elated to hear you. I haven't heard you forever because I've been missing in action.
Lulu, I miss you too, by the way. Thank you so much.
Well, I'm glad that I found you the other night, and I'm like, yes, that's Mark. My biggest sin, I think, I had the privilege in the 90s to have a chance to go courtside at a Bulls game.
Uh-huh.
And I was bored to death. So if the camera panned me, you could read it on my face because I'm not a big sports person. And I felt kind of bad, but it was an opportunity. And I guess my biggest sin was walking out. And Dennis Rodman was dating Carmen Electra at the time.
Yeah.
And she was filing out, and I didn't realize how close she was. And I made a really rude crack about her, and she heard me.
Wait, hold on a second here, Lulu. I appreciate you sharing. Now, you had bad resting face in the front row, so everybody who watched the Bulls game, who's that bored woman, Lulu, sitting in the front row? And then you cracked on Carmen Electra? What'd you say? No, you probably can't repeat that, can you?
Well, actually, I can. I said, at least mine are real.
Lulu. That's aggressive, Lulu.
Looks could kill.
I'm sure she didn't like that very much, Lulu.
No, she didn't. But that's my story.
Thank you for sharing, Lulu.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Bye.
312-981-7200. You never know what you're going to get. That was amazing. Thank you so much. All right. Now, for you, the city of Chicago, so proud to be standing here in the Streeterville neighborhood talking to you tonight in this amazing city. I know the property taxes are completely out of control. I know that the lake looks like it's going to fly over Lakeshore Drive. We might be underwater by the end of the summer. I know that's going on. I know that we have real terrible things going on in the city as well. And the city isn't perfect. But it's not how many times you get knocked down. It's how much you get back up. And the city of Chicago is getting back up. Now, let me explain. I got something in the mail here. Dear Mark Carmen, the city of Chicago has hired our law firm to represent it in the collection and disposition of the unpaid parking citation referenced below. Citation number 905-226-7662. Now, this citation, the offense date, August 21st, which is coming up here, not last year, 2001. August 21st, 2001. That is 18 years ago. 18 years ago. Yours truly, in a license plate at the time, HPG645, which I haven't had that license plate for, I don't know, 17 years, was parked at 1802 West School in the Roscoe Village neighborhood. And apparently there was street cleaning that day or a special event, one of the two. I'm going to guess it was street cleaning. And my car was parked on the wrong side of the street. Now, I've been dodging this ticket successfully since 2001. And the city of Chicago, I mean, if this was Houston, if this was Los Angeles, if this was Cincinnati, they probably would have given up. But the city of Chicago has hired Linebarger, Goggin, Blair, and Simpson to come after me. And they won $122 for 2001. And most people would be upset about this, Ro. But I am proud to live in a city that is relentless. I don't care. You know, there's 7 zillion potholes out there. My car nearly imploded on the Edens the other day. And I was driving down Western Avenue recently, nearly lost an axle over there. And hey, we sold off the parking. I'm paying $6 to park outside here for an hour. And doesn't even go to the city. Just goes to some private thing because we needed that money right away, and we spent that $1 billion. I'm not even worried about all that. Sold off the tollways, no big deal. We got no money.
But we're dedicated.
But they are going to get this parking ticket. I mean, this is impressive. And good luck to Lori Lightfoot as our new mayor. You got a whole host of zillion things that you got to tackle here. I am rooting for you.
So does that mean that there's no chance of me getting out of my parking ticket for back in college?
I'm just telling you. I thought, like, when I got this one in the mail, I mean, I was fuming. I'm like, are you kidding me? You won $122 for 2001, but then I calmed down, and I was like, wow, this is some determination. Now I got this notice. When did I get this notice? Somewhere on here it says when it was delivered to me. April, there it is, April 26th, 2019. So I've had it for just under 2 months. I'm still debating if I'm going to give in.
So you haven't even paid them?
No, I haven't. Come on. What are they going to do? Keep coming?
They're going to send you another one. They're going to send a private detective to your home.
Right. They're going to put a lien on my property.
Yeah.
Right.
They're going to start garnishing your wages.
They're going to garnish my wages.
It's only $100.
It's $122. That's a lot of dough. $122.
That's a pair of shoes.
I mean, well, right. It's a pair of shoes. I want a pair of shoes. I don't want to pay a parking ticket. 312-981-7200. A, should I pay the ticket? And B, I like to hear stories of... I know that I'm not the only one the city has come after years. Who else is out there that's gotten some notice and wants to salute the city tonight saying, way to go, city of Chicago. For all your problems, you will still go to the end of the earth 18 years later to get that parking ticket. Quick timeout, 720 WGN. City of Chicago coming after me. 11:49, Tuesday night. Got a notice in the mail. I was parked at 1802 West School. Apparently there was street cleaning going on. It was August 21st of 2001, 18 years ago. They're writing at me. My name is Mark Carmen, by the way. I live in Chicago. The Department of Administrative Hearings has found you liable for one or more parking ordinance violations. Your opportunity to contest this matter has expired. Failure to respond to this notice as requested may result in our garnishing of your wages and bank accounts and filing a lien on your property. If this becomes necessary, our client reserves the right to seek interest, attorney's fees, and other collection costs. To avoid further collection activity and additional costs, pay this bill right now, you jerk. $122.
Did it really say you jerk, though?
Nah, I might have put my own wording in there. I'm just asking the question here. 312-981-7200. Is anybody getting any? Am I the only one getting these things in the mail? Am I the one bad guy here? 2001? Are you kidding me? But congratulations, by the way, Chicago. You are determined. You are hunting down the villains like me. You will not let this go. It is your mission in life to collect all parking tickets in the history of this city. And you have hired... Who the hell have you hired? Hang on. Let me unfold this notice one more time. You have hired Lindberger, Goggin, Blair, and Simpson. Sounds like a doubles pairing. Lindberger and Goggin versus Blair and Simpson. Samson, I'm sorry. Simpson? Trucker Rich. Welcome to WGN, Trucker Rich. Are you in the same boat with me, Trucker Rich?
Yeah, but it's kind of past, and they haven't gone after me anymore. But back in 77, I got a parking ticket in Chicago.
Yeah?
They had the right license plate, the right car. The only problem, I was in the Army stationed in Georgia. And I had gotten, when I got the notice in the mail, I looked at the date. And I thought, well, maybe I was up there, you know. And it was like, no, nope, because I got a speeding ticket that same day in Georgia. And I thought, I'll just ignore it. And they sent me another letter, said they were going to, you know, take my license, you know, invalidate my license, whatever you call it. I can't think of the name of it.
Right. They'll suspend you, Trucker Rich.
Yes. So I went over, one of my neighbors was in the, was a Army lawyer for, I think it's the Adjutant General's office, I guess it is.
Uh-huh.
And I showed him the letter and I showed him the speeding ticket. He wrote this really neat letter that had all kinds of big words I'd never be able to explain or even understand or know how to look up.
He tried to validate your prosecution of the persecution?
Yes, and they sent it to the city of Chicago, and I didn't hear anything for 2 years, no nothing back, so I kept all that paperwork, you know, with all my Army stuff, and they kept sending me notices for like 10 years, and I kept sending them copies of this. I said, I thought this was resolved, you know. In 77, and you know, they haven't done anything, so I just keep tossing them in the garbage.
You
they
won.
Gave up after about 12 years.
You won, Trucker Rich. It's a W, left column, victory. Congratulations.
Yes. Yeah, it only took the Army lawyers, but you know, hey,
it was free
on my part.
Yeah, you did what you had to do, and that was scary for you. Do you work in the trucking field?
Back then I was in the Army.
Okay. I thought you were.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, now I'm a trucker, but, you know, yeah, I've been doing that since 1981, I think, driving a truck, so.
You driving right now?
Yep.
Where are you at?
I got somewhere between lost and found. In Indiana on 80-94.
Very nice.
Heading to LaPorte, so.
Hey, Trucker Rich, thank you so much for your service. We appreciate you.
Yep. Thank you. And keep fighting the ticket. Tell them it wasn't you.
Thank you.
Don't give up.
Okay. Thank you. I mean, the license plate on your HPG 645, that was my aunt's license plate. Now, Aunt Ev, my beautiful, loving aunt, passed away back in 06. She's not here to contest this.
So you get to pay the dues.
I mean, I think we got to consider this matter concluded. There's a word. Hey, Donald.
Yep.
What's up, man?
Hi.
Welcome to WGN.
This is a story about this girl I was dating. Her ex-boyfriend used to like to go through tolls when he was at the wheel of her car.
Uh-huh.
And they kept taking pictures, of course, of her license plates. She didn't know they would keep doing it. Well, they waited till it actually accumulated to $20,000 worth of fines.
That's not good.
No, so it was about 10 to 20 times as much money per violation.
Uh-huh.
So she ended up like having her IRA. She had to pay, liquidate it, you know.
Spent
several months in court, lost $8,000 that for something a guy she no longer dated for years had talked her into doing it, and they thought it was cool running a toll, and she ended up losing $8,000.
That's brutal, Donald. That's not what we're looking for. So you're telling me to pay Lindbergh, Goggin, Blair, and Sampson right now, or else I'm going to end up with my IRA out the window, huh?
It can affect your credit rating, too, and that's what was hurting her job, you know, like with this $20,000 potential lien, you know, she was in a marketing job, and this would have definitely affected it. And so she decided just to, like, bail out and take a settlement, you know, because she had the means. If you have the means, they can really come. If people don't, they could scofflaw it. And she's still kind of like on extra tickets. She moved out of town to one of the suburbs, and you know, so that she wouldn't get any more liens put on her for tickets. So she just left the city of Chicago, even though she was born and grew up here.
Okay, Donald, you're just raised my anxiety. Thank you for calling.
It's
a good job by you. You're. I thank you greatly for calling. Thank you, Donald. That was not what I needed. I feel like I got to like pay Lindbergh, Goggin, Sampson, and Blair in the city of Chicago during the break here before news. Last one, Vicky. You got a ticket from 1996, Vicky?
Yes, I do.
Way to fight the fight, Vicky. How are you doing out there?
Oh, my God, and they're still after me.
How often are you getting notices, Vicky?
Not doing anything about it. I mean, they haven't gotten back to me lately, but it's been 5 years ago I had a letter from them.
Yeah.
And they sent a letter to my employee.
To your employee?
They wanted to wage my accounts and all that.
They sent it to
my wages. And my company's still offering. But, yeah, it was 5 years ago. It was not my car. It was my husband's car.
Uh-huh.
And I worked up in Lakeview. There's nowhere to park. I had to boot up there years ago. Paid that off. But, yeah, it's...
Was it Linebogger, Gargan, Goggin, Bland, Blair, and Sampson?
Same ones.
Okay. Well, aren't we? You're impressed, right, Vicky? These people are relentless. I mean, if we were all this relentless in our careers, we'd be running the world, right?
Well, yeah, but still, yeah. I don't appreciate people like that doing that stuff.
Yeah, I got you. All right, Vicky, hang in there. All right, we're all in this. Okay, bye. We're all in this together, Vicky. How do you know that's even legit from the 815 texting? And send them a copy of your aunt's death certificate as she was the owner at the time. That many years is... Yeah, I see, right? But then, my aunt's death certificate? You think I have the organization to find that? It's not in my wheelhouse there, 815. I'm not that guy. That'd be a lot of effort. Okay. Well, congratulations, Chicago. You guys are persistent. I wanted to give you credit tonight, and I think I did a fairly good job at that. Hey, coming up after midnight, Mia Hamm, the greatest women's soccer player of all time, the World Cup going on. But the women don't make as much money as the men. I'm going to talk to Mia about that coming up here after midnight, 720 WGN. Welcome to your Wednesday. Good morning. And happy late night Tuesday for all you late night owls out there. Mark Harmon with you. I'm in for Patty tonight, and we'll be here till 1 o'clock. Nick DiGiulio coming up at 1. All right. First guest of the show tonight is a big time soccer superstar, Mia Hamm, maybe the greatest women's soccer player of all time. And if you are following along right now, the World Cup is going on. And the U.S. women today beat Thailand 13-0. That would be yesterday now. 13-0. All right. 13 goals. That's more goals than the men's national soccer team has scored in every World Cup since 2006 combined. All right. The women make a lot less money than the men. The women are full-time salaried employees, but they do not receive anywhere near the pay of the men's team. Now, the crowds are pretty damn good for the women. But we continue to have debates as to why this is the case. The U.S. women's soccer team is in a lawsuit against the U.S. Soccer Federation They're calling this purposeful gender discrimination. And, the women's team is the best team in the world, has been for a long time. The men have never gotten past the quarterfinals. It's not even close. So let's bring Mia Hamm in here. And Mia, let's start with a very simple question. I mean, why do you think the women are getting paid less than the men?
I think, first and foremost, we need more people that understand and support our game, more women involved at higher levels, the decision-making process, that have either interacted or played at the highest level and understand what it means to all of us to play. You know, good enough just can't be good enough, I think. You know, in your line of work, I don't think you ever say, oh, this will do. You have high levels of expectation and standards that you hold, and that's the way we should hold each other. And the equal pay and opportunity is no different.
Yeah, so Ada Hegerberg, who, if people don't know, she's one of the best players in the world from Norway, she's sitting out the World Cup to protest unequal pay. And one of her quotes I thought that was interesting, Mia, quote, winning all these trophies and having all the success gives you a voice. It's not about me. It's never been about me. It's about getting the change for our sport. So I'm wondering, do you think the U.S. should be taking the same stance?
You know, I think each group needs to, I'm sure they've talked about how they wanted to approach this. And it's not fair for me to comment what was grounded or rooted in their decision, because I'm not in those meetings. And I don't know, Ada, the full discussions that happened with the Norwegian Federation. Mm-hmm. She obviously feels that if she doesn't stand up, then who will? And, you know, as a fan of the game, I'm disappointed. I won't see her play this summer. Mm-hmm. But I applaud her for her courage and how resolute she's been, because it didn't just happen now. She's taken this stance the past year and a bit. So, you know, each player and each group has to decide how they want to approach it. I think also with our national team, we have a great opportunity to compete and win this thing, which gives you even a greater audience to do what needs to be done. So I'm sure those players have looked at every option.
Is Carlos Cordero, the president, doing enough in your mind?
I think we can always do better. Carlos and I haven't had any recent conversations. I know when he first took over, he was trying to make sure we got the Men's World Cup here in North America. And I know since then, he's been working hard on so many other levels. He's got a lot on his plate, but obviously this team and this dispute needs to be first and foremost. So I hope in the near future that it's resolved. And, you know, Carlos is a smart man. I think he'll do the right thing. He has to do the right thing. This is bigger than him, and this is about us just making sure that our federation is tied to history in the right way.
Why do you think historically the women have had more success than the men?
There are so many reasons. I think one is, you know, soccer has been around in this country for a long time, but not at the levels and ingrained in our fabric like American football and basketball and baseball. So we had a late start, but compared to the rest of the world on the women's side, where it was seen as a traditional men's sport, that we were able to kind of get a head start, especially in development and organization and support. And we relied mostly on the collegiate game and Title IX. So that helped the development in terms of our club system. And I remember being part of ODP and how important that was. Mm-hmm. And I think that investment and that organization really, really kind of moved us forward faster than some of the other countries. But now what you've seen is all these federations are seeing that if they invest just even a small amount onto their women's side and their youth development, the return is so great. And so what we're hoping is that they continue to increase that investment.
Yeah, real quick here, as far as women's chances here in the Cup, you lost to France earlier this year, tied Japan and England. Those are the, you know, caliber teams they're going to have to beat to win the Cup. But what do you like about their chances this year?
They're deep. They're dynamic. They have a great mix of young players like Mallory and some veteran players. And I think they believe that they can do it. I mean, the talent is there. The preparation will be there. There's no doubt with this staff. And, you know, when you go into a tournament like this, your approach is to be World Cup champions. You want to beat the best at their best. And that's how you train and prepare every single day. And I know these players are so excited for this opportunity.
How are you handling getting your competitive spirit met daily here? Because you can't just get rid of that, Mia, right? I mean, are you?
I slide tackle people at the grocery store daily.
I think that's fair. I think you're allowed to do that. You're Mia Hamm. Why not? And tell me about the movie you're involved in. I know Gatorade's a big part of this.
Yeah, no, it's a new film with Mallory. You know, it's Today Is Your Day. It taps into the iconic kind of Dr. Seuss poem, and it really demonstrates the powerful impact that sports can have on young athletes' lives. And it kind of starts off with me and ends with Mallory, and there's a lot of really amazing scenes. And it's said in the "Oh, the Places You'll Go" Dr. Seuss poem, and it's really meant to you know, me inspiring one generation and Mallory and her teammates and inspiring today's young athletes.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal message. I love it. Let me leave you with this. I'm a huge Michael Jordan fan. Did he compete with you when you did that commercial back in the day in some way? I feel like there's no way he could just let you just kick balls past him. That's just not him, and it's not you.
It was like we would shoot, and then we wouldn't talk to each other.
That seems to make sense. All right. Hey, Mia, appreciate the time. Congrats on all your success. And
right.
I'm looking forward to the movie.
Thank you.
Yep.
There we go. Mia Hamm talking about equal pay and the Women's World Cup. The Dr. Seuss poem, "Oh, the Places You'll Go." Let's all sit back for a second here. Let me have a little calm. Just read to you. You want me to take a break here and read this afterwards, Ro? You want to stay on track? That's why you're focused, Ro. That's why you're sitting in that chair. All right. "Oh, the Places You'll Go," coming on back here. And John Stewart's awesome. We're going to play what he did today as well in our next segment. It's 720 WGN.
Your business decisions require the latest business intel. Get briefed every morning with the Opening Bell.
Still looking for a gift for Dad? Techish founder Jennifer Jolly is bringing all the best new gadgets and gizmos curated especially for Father's Day at 5:08.
Steve Grzanich and the Opening Bell, later this morning at 5 on WGN Radio.
There's an amazing supper club in Wisconsin Dells, Ish Nala, nestled among the pines and perched above the sandstone bluffs of Mirror Lake. The beauty, the history, the service, the food, the fun. Hi, this is Bob Prosser, owner of Ish Nala Supper Club in Wisconsin Dells. I have been a part of Ish Nala for 30 years, and I am so proud to continue the tradition that began in 1953. Why not enjoy a brandy old-fashioned in one of our bars, each with a spectacular view overlooking Mirror Lake, or just relax before or after dinner on one of our outdoor decks? Our Ish Nala chefs have prepared your favorites: 24-ounce ribeye, cold water lobster tails, North Atlantic salmon, and of course, Ish Nala's roast duck. Thank you for making Ish Nala Wisconsin's favorite supper club. where the only thing we overlook is Mirror Lake. I'm Bob Prosser, and I want to serve you.
Honey, what are we going to do with your grandparents' old coins and jewelry?
I'm pretty sure they're worth some money.
You've been saying that for years.
Okay, how about PGS Gold and Coin? They're the best when it comes to selling family valuables.
And you know this because...
PGS, PGS, when it comes to your valuables, they're the best.
Do that again.
PGS, PGS, when it comes to your valuables, they're the best.
Isn't that the place Jeff sold his grandmother's jewelry when she passed?
Yep, he checked out PGSGoldandCoin.com and found tons of positive reviews. He was blown away by how much he got. Do you? Oh, you're already on the site.
Almost. PGSGoldandCoin.com.
PGS Gold and Coin, the upscale way of selling your coins, jewelry, diamonds, and collectibles. Family-owned and operated for over 10 years. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau with 3 Chicagoland locations, and they make house calls. PGSGoldandCoin.com or 888-416-2701. That's PGSGoldandCoin.com or 888-416-2701.
PGS. PGS. When it comes to your valuables, they're the best.
Hey, make Sundays your official night to tour the city, watch Chicago's Best at 10 p.m., and then you can stick around for the latest in shopping, entertainment, and events on See Chicago at 10:30 p.m. on WGN-TV. So soccer great Mia Hamm, referencing the Dr. Seuss poem, Oh, the Places You'll Go. Oh, the places you'll go. Do you know this poem? Ro, do you know it?
It's good old Dr. Seuss.
So you do know it?
I do know it.
Congratulations. Today's your day. You're off to great places. You're off and away. You have brains in your head. You have feet in your shoes. You can steer yourself any direction you choose. Remember that one. I love that. Any direction you choose. You're on your own, and you know what you know. And you are the guy who'll decide where to go. You'll look up and down streets. Look them over with care. About some of you will say, I don't choose to go there. With your head full of brains and your shoes full of feet, you're too smart to go down any not-so-good street. Isn't this beautiful? I feel like it's a great... Dr. Seuss is amazing.
It's teardropping.
And you may not find any. You'll want to go down. In that case, of course, you'll head straight out of town. That's what I should do with this parking ticket. It's opener there in the wide open air. Out there, things can happen. And frequently do to people as brainy and footsy as you. And then things start to happen. Don't worry, don't stew. Just go right along. You'll start happening too. I'm not going to read the rest of it, but oh, the places you'll go. I think I should start reading Dr. Seuss more. Dr. Seuss is just making me feel better.
Just a couple of refreshers don't hurt.
Right. Just a little reminder. Sometimes you need a little bit of a Dr. Seuss. All right. I want to give some credit to Jon Stewart, who is immensely talented and has a huge heart. And he's advocating for our first responders from 9/11. And he went and spoke today to the House Judiciary Committee, advocating for the people that ran into buildings, that were doing everything they possibly could to keep people alive, all the way back in 2001. And there was a lot of money spent back then, but we still have people from then who have cancer and can't afford health care, and the funding's being stopped. So this was Jon Stewart earlier today.
I want to thank Mr. Collins, Mr. Naylor for putting this together, but as I sit here today, I can't help but think what an incredible metaphor this room is for the entire process that getting health care and benefits for 9/11 first responders has come to. Behind me, a filled room of 9/11 first responders, and in front of me, a nearly empty Congress. Sick and dying, they brought themselves down here to speak. to no one. It's shameful. It's an embarrassment to the country, and it is a stain on this institution. And you should be ashamed of yourselves for those that aren't here, but you won't be. Because accountability doesn't appear to be something that occurs in this chamber. We don't want to be here. Lou doesn't want to be here. None of these people want to be here. But they are, and they're not here for themselves. They're here to continue fighting for what's right. Lou's going to go back for his 69th chemo. The great Ray Pfeiffer would come down here, his body riddled with cancer and pain, where he couldn't walk. And the disrespect shown to him and to the other lobbyists on this bill is utterly unacceptable. You know, I would be so angry at the latest injustice that's done to these men and women. And, you know, another business card thrown our way as a way of shooing us away. Like children trick-or-treating, rather than the heroes that they are and will always be.
So that was Jon Stewart. Now what a sensational human being. He's speaking to the House Judiciary Committee. They're trying to reauthorize the September 11th Victim Compensation Fund. How is it even possible, right, that there isn't money for the first responders from 9/11? Fund is set to expire in 2020. There's apparently a special master who runs it. And apparently there's plans to cut the payouts between 50 and 70% so everybody will get paid. There's not enough money to go around for everybody to get fully paid. So we're going to cut it by 50 to 70% so you all get some. Now, this fund has paid out $7 billion in damages from 01 to 03. But that just hasn't been enough. These people are still sick. They're still dying. They still need care. Firefighters, policemen. It was reopened in 2011. Extended for 5 years in 2015. And there's a representative, Carol Maloney, who put in legislation last Friday to fund the program permanently. Now, how could that program not be funded permanently? How could every single responder from 9/11 who was dealing with health issues, taking on asbestos and chemicals and whatever was coming off those buildings as they're trying to save lives, how could they not be insured and be taken care of by this country until their dying day? Right? Is it not enraging? I mean, come on. And this shouldn't be a political thing. Right, left, down the middle, wherever you are. Where's the common sense here?
It seems like
we got enough money. I know we do, even though we claim that we don't. Go ahead.
It seems like for something that big, you would have that money set aside, you know? For somebody to risk their lives, for other people's lives, expose themselves to all these dangerous chemicals. Actually, interesting enough, producer Tom just came in and said pretty much the same thing. But why not have something set aside? Why is this even something that we have to bring to Congress?
And if you go online and you check out the video, it's amazing. He's speaking to a bunch of empty chairs. There's like 10 people up there.
That's disappointing.
And he mentions Ray Pfeiffer. He was a New York City firefighter. He passed away from terminal cancer in 2017. And it was as a result of his rescue missions at Ground Zero. This is just, it's just not right. It's flat out not right. And I give Jon Stewart a ton of credit for stepping up and advocating. And as he said, these people don't want to be here. They don't want to be they don't want to be dragging their body in front of a Judiciary Committee begging for money. I mean, come on. We should be doing better. All right, news coming up, 720 WGN. Bunch of texts coming in on the Jon Stewart comments. 217. We don't take care of our veterans, so why is this so hard to believe? It's a very fair text. Military personnel coming back over. PTSD. I mean, suicide rate is terrifying. Rags of Honor have done some great work, and they've been in studio a bunch here. But, yeah, so as far as how that applies to a fund for the first responders for 9/11 potentially running out, same thing. We're going to have Wayne Mesmer, who sings the national anthem. Used to sing it for the Blackhawks at Old Chicago Stadium. Now he's with the Wolves. You hear him at Wrigley Field. He was a victim of gun violence 25 years ago, nearly lost his singing voice. I'm going to have Wayne coming up here. It's a conversation that I've wanted to play for a long time. But I do want to mention this. We had a terrible, terrible weekend in Chicago. So much violence. And there was a piece in the Tribune today. The youngest victim from last weekend's violence was a 12-year-old boy who was shot in the back when he ran into a kid he owed money from a basketball game at a neighborhood park on the south side. Jalen Miller told police he was walking near his mom's home, West 111th Place, 4:30 in the afternoon on a Saturday. When he spotted the boy, the two had played basketball for money. Jalen didn't pay. This is what kids do. You're 11, you don't pay. Jalen told police he yelled out, and someone with the other boy said, "Oh yeah, watch this." Pulls out a gun, starts shooting. Jalen ends up back at his mom's house, goes into the bathroom before telling his mom that he thinks he's been shot. And he had been, right on the right side of his back. Goes to the hospital where he was stabilized. This is not surprising to anyone in this city, right? But a 12-year-old playing basketball who didn't pay, and this is what happens?
I'm not going to point out the obvious.
What is the obvious?
I mean, so what neighborhood were they in?
Southside.
Southside. So little black boy on the south side of Chicago gets shot in the back while playing basketball for not paying. It's one of those stories that kind of continues to repeat itself in different variations.
Right.
And although very, very, very disappointing, at this point, I'm not surprised.
He just finished sixth grade, Crete Moni Middle School.
So he's south suburbs.
Yeah.
Wow.
He was among at least 45 people shot over the weekend.
It's the summertime.
43 Memorial Day weekend, 7 fatally. Lori Lightfoot held her second, quote, accountability Monday meeting with top police officials. We're trying to do is build a foundation to really move the violence number down fairly dramatically. Authorities arrested 36 people on gun charges, confiscated 89 guns. That's according to police spokesman Anthony Guglielmi. I hope I said that right. I'm just hoping for a better day. That's all I'm saying. All right, I want to bring Wayne in here, who 25 years ago, he was leaving a bar called Hawkeyes, which was by then Chicago Stadium, now the United Center. And he's going to his car, and I'll let Wayne pick up the story from here.
Most everybody's been to Hawkeyes or Rosebud, and I had been in Hawkeyes and walked a block and a half back to my parked car, a trip that I had taken on foot a few times before. And a kid walking down the street didn't like the looks of it, got into my car, watched him, kept my eye on him, and didn't realize there was another 15-year-old who ran up on me. And as I pulled out of the parking space, he banged on the window twice right next to my ear. And then as I hit the gas, because from the sound, he pulls the trigger. It's a 9mm, point blank, shot through the glass into my neck. And the bullet actually lodged in the muscle on the right side of my neck. It's not that I was superhuman by any means. Apparently, it's just a lot of divine intervention happened. I was wearing a Save the Children Foundation tie at the time. And that went into the bullet hole of the wound and stopped a lot of the bleeding. I was able to drive the block and a half back to where I had walked from, get out of the car, walk back up and knock on the door at Hawkeye's, wait for the police and ambulance to arrive, and left it in the hands of the paramedics and the surgeons after that.
So you remember it.
Oh, vividly.
Yeah.
Vividly. Yeah, it's interesting because the adrenaline rush that people talk about, yeah, it's real.
I'm sure.
Yeah, it's real. And no previous experience needed to let you know that you've just been shot either. You know?
Right, that's something that nobody ever, I mean, I've never even thought about it. I mean, I guess I... You know, when I'm looking around,
don't
like
even a, fantasize about
right.
it. You know, it's not worth it.
So you drive back, and I'm assuming you're in shock at this point?
I would have to have been in shock, yeah. Walked in, sat down, and the term buzzkill, because imagine walking back into the bar where 6-1 victory, Hawks beat the Blues, it's a Friday night in spring. Whoa, what is this, man? You know, Anthem dude is walking in, looked like a scene out of the Old West, you know, and sat down, waited for the police, the ambulance to arrive. It, you know, when you drop a drop of oil in water, how it just dissipates?
Yeah.
That's kind of how the crowd just, whoa, you know, parted. And one a dear friend whom I just saw in Arizona, who's now a mom of three and married to a Navy fighter pilot, at the time was a nursing student. She stepped forward and just put the pressure on the spot. And I mean, I'm eternally grateful for that moment.
Did you think I'm going to die?
I didn't know. I thought dying was not an option. I thought that right away.
Yeah.
But, you know, what now what? Because the golden goose not only had, you know, they didn't just break the egg, they kicked the goose pretty hard. And I'm thinking, this may be it for what I do for a living may have just ended abruptly. But who I am was not going to change.
Yeah, so let me get to that in a second, but I want to tie it back into old Chicago Stadium, which I will forever say was the greatest arena, outdoor, indoor. I just love it to the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
That was the last year of the stadium, right?
Right, that was it.
And 5 days later would have been the last anthem.
Yeah.
You can't sing. You've just been shot. Mm-hmm. You're alive, thank God. Your wife, Kathleen, yep. is up by the organ.
Standing in the spot where I would have sung. I look at that picture, I can't even... I can't look at it. It just tears me up.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
And they play a recording of you singing O Canada because they're playing the Maple Leafs.
Correct. Yeah.
And they play your anthem.
Yeah.
And
that was a moment.
I mean, that's incredible. I mean, you obviously didn't want that to happen, but just look. And the reason why I bring it up is because you had Blackhawks players saying it's not going to be the same without Wayne.
Mm-hmm.
You have all these fans are holding up signs, you know, get away. I mean, it's all on display for you.
Well, it was the most humbling experience ever. Yeah. And, you know, as that moment you just mentioned with Kathleen is been rivaled a few times. She did not come with me to opening day yesterday, not because she didn't want to. She is a huge baseball and Cub fan and has such a crush on Joe Madden, and I think it's mutual. But she started yesterday as a volunteer in hospice program. You know, it's like that takes a special
it does.
Heart, a special person to do that. And you know, so I realized that I had won the lottery with her.
That's and you've sung for people who don't know, you've done a million anthems together with her.
Yeah, we'll do probably seven, I think, this year scheduled at Wrigley together.
Okay.
On Sundays we do God Bless America and the anthem, national anthem.
So okay, now let's go back where you were leading before, as far as here you are, this is your life,
mm-hmm.
your identity, and now it's being taken away from you. You don't know if you're going to get it back, and you've got to reassess. Well, what am I going to do? I guess if I'm not the singer, right?
Yeah, and that didn't come right away, you know, because you're first making the decision. How am I going to live through this? I was off to Cook County Hospital. The two guys who came as paramedics, I've maintained communication with, and 20 years after, we brought them out to the Allstate Arena for a Chicago Wolves hockey game, of which I'm a founding partner, and walked out on the red carpet, flanked by these two guys, Bill and Henry, and it was the first time the three of us had been together since that night. and with them in full salute, and I'm singing the national anthem. It was a moment. It was a great moment. Yeah. But, you know, I didn't wake up for 2.5 days after the shooting and didn't really know. I was hoping it was just a bad, bad dream.
Yeah.
But it was a real nightmare. And I wake up and I'm so foggy and confused and morphined up and can't move my fingers, can't move my toes, can't call anyone over, can't make a sound. I've got the tracheotomy tube, you know, size of a sewer pipe. I'm on a respirator, and and I'm thinking, this is not what I had in mind here for a Friday night after a hockey game, you know, because it's Tuesday afternoon by this point. And so a lot's going through your mind. Like, number one, wait, if this really happened and I can't move my fingers and toes and I got hit in the neck, there's a lot of mechanics inside there.
You're laying there.
Yeah, I laid there unable to communicate for, 2.5 days.
Oh, my God.
And I can vividly take myself back to that point. I usually don't. But I'm thinking, oh, my God, something happened in surgery. It was a 10-hour overnight surgery. Or it hit something along the way, and that bullet. And I thought, whoa, wait. Steal my voice now and also be left as a quad because I couldn't move any toes and fingers. You almost go insane. You almost combust, you know, because you're trapped. You're in a collapsed mine, that kind of thing. It's like, you know, and it was rough.
That's my biggest fear, right? I mean, you think about, well, being on a plane and going down or whatever. I used to go on cruises as a kid. Like, what if I fell off and I'd be in the middle of the ocean?
Right.
But being a quadriplegic,
yeah,
that's like number one terror. I can't move. I can't play sports.
I know. I know. But then I'm immediately thinking, how do you possibly come up with something positive out of this? And, you know, I start hearing, finally, I'm able to, my fingers start working, my toes, and I'm able to make a little bit of a grunt, but it was weeks before that. So I'm writing down on a board, you know, and I write to Kathleen, I call her over, I said, did this make the news, is what I wrote in there. She gives me that Ralph Cramden look, you know, and yeah, it was in the news. And that is another thing that gave me such a tremendous feeling of humility. I mean, to have such an outpouring that I just can't, I will never let that go.
And you wrote about it, and people can check out all your stuff, WayneMesmer.com.
Mm-hmm.
And you got the book, The Voice of Victory, One Man's Journey to Freedom Through Healing and Forgiveness. And you have one quote that I pulled out here. In preparing for change, it takes a readiness to accept the expected as well as the unexpected. I'm trying to relate this to myself, and, you know, okay, I work in radio, you're familiar with this. You're always worried, though, who's going to get fired and what's going to happen next,
right?
And how am I going to survive, and when am I going to end up, you know, working the career? Am I going to have to go become a sales guy? So, like, you bet everybody else has the same thing in their job. What happens if I get fired?
Mm-hmm.
What happens if my wife passes away? What happens? All sorts of terrible things can happen in life and do happen, and then you have to move forward.
Yeah, and you're consumed by that. When nobody was looking, I got a PhD in psychology, so I study a lot about the human mind, including trying to figure out my own. And part of what cripples us is the fear of the future and also dwelling on the past. And it affects the present so much that it truly does affect the future. There's a phrase that I love. It says, sometimes you will never know the true value of a moment until it becomes a memory. In other words, you missed it. You know, just you and I talking can have significance for both of us, if you allow it to, you know, live your life with your eyes open and be more concerned not about about where you are, you know. So it doesn't matter where I am; it matters the fact that I am. You get what I mean?
I do.
Yeah.
It's. I think you're talking about being present.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And a lot of us, we are so wrapped up every day in the doing. I got to be here. I got to finish this. I got to go over there. Versus to actually being mm-hmm. you just in this moment with your kids, with a friend,
right.
Even with just with yourself. What am I? You know, what's going on with me right now that I'm wanting to eat 10 Oreos or whatever else. You know, it's right. You know, and there's a million
the big the new ones, the big thick ones.
Those
oh
are
my the, gosh.
Right. Those are delicious.
Yeah.
And now I feel
kudos
like
to whoever.
They're never taking food off the table here, so to speak. So, you do speaking around this. What do people sort of latch onto? What do you see?
I think they tap into hope more than anything else. I talk a lot about when I kind of do a theory of you're wearing a championship cap. You see guys after winning the championship pouring champagne on their heads. And, you know, I always laugh because game seven, you have championship caps for both teams. And what happens to the team that loses in the 10th inning in 2016. So down somewhere in a third world country, there are some Cleveland Indians World Series 2016 championship caps. But I thought championship caps, C-A-P, C, commitment above all, A, attitude, and P, perseverance. I think those are the three things that I've learned in all of the industries that I've been involved in, and that's what winners and champions have.
That's part of my conversation with Wayne Mesmer, Chicago legend, singing the anthem pretty much everywhere, still doing it for Wolves games and Cubs games. You can hear more of that if you want to check out my podcast, On the Mark with Mark Carmen. You can find that iTunes all over the place. And it was awesome to talk to Wayne. And congratulations to the Wolves, by the way. They made it to the Calder Cup Finals once again. Did lose to the Charlotte Checkers. But phenomenal season for the Wolves. And Wayne's been over there for a long, long time. I appreciate him talking about everything here with me, as you heard tonight on 720 WGN.
So long, farewell to you, my friends. Goodbye for now. Until we meet again, I say so long, farewell to you, my friends. Goodbye for now. Until we meet again. It's been great to play and sing together.
In the box.
And now it's
what is this?
To say goodbye.
Is this my box?
Is this my goodbye song?
This is the goodbye song.
To you,
is there any music? Like a kicks in or something?
No, they're saying goodbye. Until we meet again.
Okay.
Goodbye for now. Until we meet again.
Aw, thank you. Who were those people?
Out of the Box, it was an old Disney show growing up, and that was their goodbye song.
Was that like your childhood playing out right in front of me right there, Ro?
It was, actually.
No, that's beautiful. All right, before I get out of here, Nick D coming up, I just want to tell one story from today. I'm on the L. I'm going to work. I'm going to my other place of occupation, good old Fansided. And I'm on the red line. I'm headed north. I'm in between Fullerton and Belmont. Train's moving along nicely. And then all of a sudden, dead stop. And you get the notification from the L train operator. Sorry, we are pausing because there is a maintenance issue on the train. I'm like, I didn't hear any maintenance issue. Train seemed like it was moving along fine. What's going on? So what happened was, I was in the second to last car. In the last car, somebody decided they just had to get off that train and they needed to get off right now. So they went, pulled the ripcord, or whatever you want to call it, the emergency, I got to get off now thing that you pull down, and proceeded to jump off the train right onto the tracks.
What line were you on?
I was on the red line, headed north, in between Fullerton and Belmont. You're shaking your heads like that makes sense?
Because it does.
Why does that make sense?
Because the red line and the blue line is where the most outlandish things happen.
To jump off the train mid-ride. I mean, we just left Fullerton. Belmont's coming right up. Why would you do such a thing?
He didn't have time for that. He needed to get off right there.
I mean, and where do you go? You're on the tracks.
Are you underground or overground?
We were overground.
I guess you can always, you know, jump off.
Jump down?
Hey.
Call it a career?
Call it a career.
And
stunt double.
And so then, you know, the train operator's walking all the way to the back, and she's interviewing people in the last car. What did you see? And they're doing written testimonials. And the people that she was talking to didn't seem like they had perhaps written very much recently. So it was taking forever as they're writing this stuff down. And I'm just sitting there like, this is amazing.
So I did put out a video. If you can, you want to check it out, it's at the Carm on Twitter. Hashtag the Carm commute. But I've been riding the L since I came out of the womb about 40 some odd years ago.